loved by J.K. Chesterton, J.R.R. Tolkien, and Evelyn Waugh, the Catholic Herald magazine has been a bold and influential voice in the church since 1888, standing up for traditional Catholic culture and values. Subscribe today for print and digital access by visiting our website at www.catholicherald.co.uk.
Welcome to Merely Catholic with me, Gavin Ashenden. What would you think about the idea of a Catholic Hollywood? Well, the nearest thing to it is JP Catholic, John Paul the Great Catholic University, which was formed to help Catholic students through filmmaking, game development, animation, creative writing, music, and business innovation, impact the culture for Christ with a focus on creative arts, business, and theology programs. It came about through the inspiration of Dr. Derry Connolly. Now, he holds a PhD in applied mathematics from Caltech in Pasadena. And his story is that one day he was visiting Franciscan University of Steubenville. It was November 2000. And Dr. Derry Connolly was in chapel praying one evening, having been astonished at the experience of meeting a campus full of young Catholic students on fire for God. He was praying in front of the Blessed Sacrament in the Portiuncular Chapel, and he felt the Lord place on his heart, as he says, the request to build a university like Franciscan in San Diego. You won't be surprised to know that he resisted the idea, saying to God, "A university is too big and too expensive, and I don't know how to do it." Well, he did do it, and James Crowell is the Mission Advancement Officer and PR representative for John Paul the Great Catholic University, and he joins me now to explain how that happened and the impact that it's made. James, thank you for meeting me online. Yes. as in real time. We've spoken on the phone down the line. It's always extraordinary to see someone's face, and it could be that this is going to be one of our first visual YouTube broadcasts as well. But meanwhile, for those who can't see you, you're a great deal younger than your voice.
Okay, well, I think that's a good thing.
I'm sure it's a very good thing. Let me give people an introduction. You're the PR representative for John Paul the Great Catholic University, and you're a Creative Arts and Business Innovation School in Escondido, California. That's just such a rich series of images. But first of all, why John Paul the Great instead of JP2? I mean, it's very powerful and very immediately full of impact. But I would have thought JP2, someone must have made a decision to do something more exciting and dramatic.
You know, at risk of speaking for just everyone here and the history here, I would imagine exactly how you just said it right there. It has more power and more weight. And I think that, you know, kind of going back to what we are trying to do as a school, we're trying to kind of bring together something that I think a lot of Catholics, but a lot of people in general, right? We think of the church and you think of Gregorian chant and these beautiful Gothic cathedrals and different things like that. You don't think of film and television and video games and animation. And so kind of trying to combine these two ideas where, you know, we are a Catholic school that really takes our faith seriously, the teachings and the history and the culture of our faith, you know, grand, glorious things like John Paul the Great Catholic University. But at the same time, we're also going to, you know, try and embrace the modern culture to a certain extent, right? Embrace the tools of our modern time and see if we can't speak to people through the modern technology, the modern arts, so to speak.
So we have a number of listeners, of course, in America, a growing number, I should say. But in England, we're not used to the idea of Catholic universities, partly, which is ridiculous, because, of course, the Catholics invented the universities. And, and I mean, they're all monastic foundations, so people have long forgotten that. But so we're used to some with a kind of state Anglican connection, but there are very few that have an overt Catholic nature. But it's not the same in the States, where you have a lot more pioneering freedom. Can you explain what a Catholic school dedicated to the creative arts and business actually does? Why Catholic, and what's the remit of the school?
Yeah, I mean that's a. I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about the differences there, because that's something that even on our first introduction, just greatly fascinates me, because I think that you really get locked in sort of your tunnel vision, what you experience, and so I think it's so interesting that there is such a vastly different Catholic experience country to country. I mean, state to state, even here in America, but really country to country. So yeah, I mean, as far as Catholic universities, I think that, you know, there are varying degrees of commitment when it comes to kind of the great universities in America. And I think that we're kind of coming into an age of revitalization, where we're really trying to reaffirm the desire for education and goodness and truth and beauty. And I think because of that, you know, because you might have these larger Catholic universities that have kind of lost their way, and maybe aren't as committed to their original purpose.
Let me stop you there, because this is very interesting. The reason for stopping you is I want to pursue that line of thought. So when you said we're about to come into an age of revitalization, this is very exciting, because I'm what a friend of mine describes as an apocalyptic optimist. I am optimistic, but I'm apocalyptic at the same time. And I see very few signs of reinvigoration. So you've described what I did know, which is there are some fairly staid Catholic institutions that are run out of Catholic steam. They're Catholic in name only, effectively. And I can well imagine that there are some new educational kids on the block that are saying, well, we're going to actually be true to our Catholic roots and our Catholic vision. So I can imagine that there are some in your timescale, older universities and some refreshed universities. But when you said we're entering a time of reinvigoration, did you mean for everybody, or that you, the new Catholic creations, you are the new invigoration? In what way does it relate to the old ones who've effectively given up on their Catholic identity?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think it's both in a way, and I know that sounds like a cop-out answer, but I think that they parallel, right? So this kind of reinvigoration in the culture at large, or at least let's say the American culture at large, and maybe some sort of return to traditional values, and this kind of learning of the hard way why things were done the way they were done, right? Why we had these traditions and values that we held to, and that they weren't just arbitrary, and that they helped encourage certain behaviors in a certain kind of society that we all enjoyed the benefits of. I think that's kind of the larger cultural image, and I think there is a parallel within the Catholic sphere, where we are seeing the power of really embracing our Catholic faith and standing by those values and proclaiming them in a world that people are often afraid to proclaim anything. And so really standing by something, and you know, this has nothing to do with, you know, necessarily like ways masses are celebrated or different things like this. It's really just a proclamation of what we believe is the truth, and standing by those values and being firm yet kind in and really challenging, I think, a world where people are so rarely challenging people to be better, to meet us where we are, and to strive for something greater.
This is very exciting. I mean, I know you're paid to say this.
I'm not. I believe all this. I swear. That's why I'm here. I'm so passionate about this.
No, I didn't give you an insult. What I meant was that doesn't mean it's untrue. It's just so let me just explore the truth or untruth of it. I mean, the reason I'm intrigued is because I helped with some friends start an organization in this country called DICE, Defense of the Integrity of Catholic Education, because secondary education, what you'd call high school, has been evacuated of all Catholic influence. So although the Catholic Church shares joint responsibility with the state for large numbers of high school educational facilities, the level of Catholic input is very, very low. Indeed, they can't even find Catholic teachers to teach in them.
Oh, my goodness.
So now I know that's true in the States as well, because we've been involved in talking to people who are dealing with the booming homeschooling movement. How is it that there are colleges and universities which are truly Catholic, but so few high schools that are Catholic?
Well, so it's interesting, and this may just be from my personal experience, but I want to say maybe in the last 15, 20 years, probably a little bit farther, but we'll just be conservative and say in the last 15, 20 years, there has been kind of this focus on what we're calling like classical education, right? So these right. classical high schools teaching you logic and Shakespeare and Aristotle and Euclidean geometry.
The Chesterton Academy curriculum, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I went to a school very much like that, St. Monica's Academy up in La Quinata, which is a fantastic organization. And yeah. there were, St. Monica's was kind of leading the charge maybe 15, 20 years ago. And a bunch of other schools have started popping up. So I do think there is this revitalization at the high school level. There's this focus overall, I think, in Catholic education. And I think that our school is really trying to just take the next step, which is, yes, education is important, but what do your kids go and talk about on the weekends? They're talking about the content they're consuming, the shows they're watching on Netflix. And I think that if we get to a point, and I don't think we're quite there yet, but we're on the road, right, where the values that undermine even the basic sort of hero's journey are false, are bad is good and good is bad, there's not even really room for discussion. Now we're dealing with separate planes of kind of reality entirely. And so I think that continuing the importance of Catholic education, JP Catholic came in and we said, look, obviously Catholic education is important. We want to be a part of that, but we also want to change the world at large. We want to, you know, our tagline, so to speak, is impact the culture for Christ. And that's what we want to do because there's this important need for goodness, truth, and beauty. And I know that we could stop and have a whole podcast about like, what is goodness, truth, and beauty? But at the same time, you know, You know what I mean, right? When I go to a meeting and I talk to people about the school and I say, I want to make movies that your grandkids can watch, everyone knows generally, like understands the point of that. And I think that, I don't know, we're trying to kind of take that next step and continue Catholic education, but also start impacting the world at large as opposed to just training people.
So most unusually, I'm not going to take you down the philosophical path and ask you to define those terms, although I normally love to do it, but simply because, first of all, we'll assume that our Catholic audience knows what we're talking about, but more importantly,
right.
Because I want to ask you about the how to do it rather than the what it is. You won't know this, but there's a cultural artistic phenomenon in Europe called Eurovision Song Contest. And this is hundreds of millions of viewers. I think I heard someone say 600 million, but that sounds an enormous figure. It's just anyway, it's enormous. So all the countries of Europe, 30 or 40 countries, put forward a singer, and they have a contest. It's banal pop with some exciting dancing. And so for the last 40 or 50 years, it's been a showcase of fairly banal entertainment industry, but harmless, and occasionally a bit of nice music creeps the top right. and wins. We've just had one, and not only was it taken over by anti-Semitic pro-Palestinian protests, which isn't a huge surprise, but one of the more vocal acts from Ireland, for example, was a woman who claimed to be a non-binary witch engaging in occultism. And whilst in the last few years we've had a great many people who have been involved in sex changes and women with beards, we reached a kind of low point this year of witches and occultism as the epitome of public culture. One would hope, short of paedophilia, we sunk as low as we can get. That's the experience in Europe.
Right.
So when I say, how are you going to bring Christ into entertainment, film and arts? that's a more pressing question than what is love, truth and beauty. So you talked about making
right.
the kind of films that your grandchildren would want to watch. So is it mainly about film? Is it film and music or just film? And how do you even begin
right.
to roll back this extraordinary decadence of culture that in Europe, at any rate, we've found ourselves dealing with?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you start by starting, and I think that's very American of us, I'm sure. But I really do think that there's no better way to start than just starting. And I think that is what we've done. You know, we're coming up on 21 years here as a university in comparison to schools in America and certainly schools in Europe. We're very, very young, and I think we're aware of that. But at the same time, you know, nobody else is. There's a call, and we feel like we need to answer it, and it seems like we're the ones to, and so we kind of leap at that opportunity. As far as the programs, so film is sort of our favorite child. I think right. It gets a lot of attention because it's film, right? Movies, Hollywood, it's flashy, it's awesome, right? It's very impressive to say that you're a school that makes movies. But we cover all the creative arts, so film, animation, graphic design, illustration, video games. You know, we're starting a music program here in September. We have business and theology, of course, because, I mean, I feel like we couldn't be a Catholic school without a theology program. But the whole idea was to take kind of a practical approach to the arts, right, and have it be almost a mentorship. So we have purposefully kept our student body reasonably sized. We have about 300 students right now. And, you know, in talks about future projections and different things like that, we want to keep it a lower number because we think that, you know, going into the arts, there's no use in having a film class with 100 kids where you learn about film theory and you can't do anything about it. You have this great professor that he's a Hollywood professional. He writes, you know, in Hollywood, and yet there's no access. There's this distance. And so the whole approach to the school is kind of mentor-based, project-based learning, where it's a small class and you can bring your script to your professor after class and go, hey, professor, what do you think about this? And he can work with you on that script, and you know, you can make a movie, you can make an album. So we have a program here at the school called the Feature Film Program, and it's, to my understanding, it is unlike any other film school in California, Catholic or otherwise, where we walk the students through the entire process of making a full length, you know, 90-minute feature film. So the students will submit a script. It'll be looked at by Hollywood professionals. They'll choose a script. They'll go through an extensive editing process, pre-production, and then with a very small budget, the students will make a full-length feature film with a Hollywood director and full sets. And the beauty of that, obviously, right, is that we can practice what we preach. At the end of it, we have a movie that we can put into the culture, something that we're proud of, something that we think kind of uplifts the world as opposed to dragging it down. But then on top of that, you have students leaving our school with 2-3 full-length feature film credits, right? Experience, learning, dealing with the pressure of a budget and time constraints and a professional environment. And so we really try and take that approach to all of our education here, you know, similar to the music, and really just try and give the students an opportunity to get their hands dirty, to prepare them for the future, right? That's the reason we have business. Everybody kind of thinks like, oh, it's a little odd, right? Art school, but then also business. But that's part of it, is that we're trying to equip people for the world. We're not just trying to teach you the philosophical or theoretical value of art. We want you to be ready for it. And part of art, part of Hollywood, part of anything is business. You need to know how to run a business. You need to know how to sell your product. You need to know the money and funding and investment that goes into the making of really any art, but especially, you know, a film. And so it's the beauty and the idea is that it's like you can have the class of 2024 and there are pockets of those people that can go off and do their own things. And Jerry can say, hey, man, come and do the videography for my business and I'm going to do this business. And so we're really trying to kind of empower, so to speak, these kids in the best ways that we can. So that really immediately post-graduation, you can go into the world and practically be an artist as opposed to just sort of dream of it.
So this is an extraordinary vision to have. So someone 20 years ago said, we're going to take back the culture. There's going to be a Christian renaissance. We're going to reinvigorate a dying culture with Christian vision, Christian values. That must have been an enormously difficult thing to pull off. And in the 2 decades or so that you've existed, to actually end up with a school, you say 300 students isn't a large number compared to big universities, is not, but as an entity that you put together over a couple of decades, it's extraordinary. Who had this vision, and how on earth did they manage to bankroll it and make it happen?
Right. Well, so our president, who I think he would. Loved. He's a big fan of your show, actually, and certainly should feature here. But our president, Dr. Derry Connolly, about about 20, a little longer than 20 years ago now, was sitting in the chapel of another Catholic university and really kind of just received a moment of inspiration that he should start a school, a Catholic school for the arts. And, you know, his background is not in the arts. His background is in business and STEM. And so I think that speaks even more to the fact of you know, this kind of divine inspiration.
Right. Common sense, it doesn't make any sense. So we have to assume right? it's divine. And I mean, that's very exciting. How very brave of him. Incredibly brave.
Yeah. And it's an amazing organization. Like, you know, even before I became involved, I would hear, you know, rumors. And then I was a big fan of movies and television and writing, which is kind of my chosen craft. And you know, people would go, oh, well, you should go John Paul the Great Catholic University. You should check it out. And, you know, I'll be honest, in my mind, I rolled my eyes and was like, oh, okay, it's going to be, you know, a Catholic mom talking about her favorite scenes from Braveheart. Like, this is not a legitimate institution. This is going
to
be
silly. I was
silly.
Just looking for the sort of, the most grotesque way of parodying it to throw it over, but you've done it for me. And that then, because you're right, at some level, you know, the idea of being a good and beautiful and true doesn't appeal to very many 18-year-olds, but unless they are practicing Catholics who've been caught up by the integrity of their faith, and they've been moved by saints, by parents, by people whose lives have illuminated them as human beings. So presumably the people who apply to you select themselves almost, because they're kids who've already got an appetite for this vision of human renewal. Are there many? I mean, you've got 300, but I mean, maybe it's something that actually the Catholic Church produces on its own. Maybe that's exactly the sign of an authentic, you know, an authentic renewal within the Catholic Church, that it does produce young men and women who've got artistic gifts, who want to serve the Church and our Lord and the community together. It's a sign of great hope that you've got 300 of them there. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly inspirational. And I think that, you know, at least in personal experience, it's in America, you know, the arts and the movie industry, it's, you know, in Catholic circles, I think people had given up hope. At least that's something that I personally experienced a lot, right? So, you know, there's like a classic phrase of like, oh, Holly weird, or like, no, you can't do that, or everybody, you know, they sell their souls to the devil and different things like that. And look, they may be correct to varying degrees of accuracy. I don't know. But you know, if you showed any interest in that, it was like, well, that's too bad, because that's just not possible. And so to see anyone, really, even if it was 10 people, but 300, and a faculty of people who, like I said, work in Hollywood, who are writing scripts of movies that I've actually heard of, right? You know, things starring with Denzel Washington and whatever that might be. It's incredibly inspirational, and it's such a great place and a great culture to be a part of. Because yes, it's difficult, and yes, that you know, prudence is probably the most important virtue for you to bring into the entertainment industry, and it's going to be very tricky to navigate, but it still doesn't mean that there aren't people that think like you, and it still doesn't mean that there aren't stories that you can tell and an impact that you can have in the world. I mean, the Catholic Church has such a rich history in the arts, and it seems sad, really, I think tragic, that we've given up on that, or it seems like there's less, maybe not given up, but there's less enthusiasm about the arts. And maybe that's because it's something a little bit less romantic. You know, a movie's not as romantic as the Sistine Chapel ceiling. It just doesn't feel as classic or as traditional to a certain extent. But I think they have the same power. And regardless, you know, the tools are here and other people are using them to say other things. So at a certain point, you have to answer that call, and I think that there are – I don't know. I just think there's such a rich history of Catholic storytellers, Catholic and Christian, and I would love to, you know, help bring in the new generation.
Well, it's certainly true in terms of music and architecture, which are the most obvious, that the Catholic faith has given birth to the most beautiful things that our civilization has ever known and experienced, whether it's the Monteverdi Vespers or Michelangelo. Catholic art is the tops, And there's presumably no reason why that shouldn't extend to the visual arts. I mean, obviously, by visual, I mean the movies rather than pictures and paintings. Tell me a bit about your own journey. Presumably, it sounds like you're an alumnus of the place. Did you go to school there and you're working for it, or did you go to school elsewhere and then discover it after, when you needed a job?
I actually didn't go to school at all. So somewhere in between. So I graduated in 2020, which is just really exposing my youth here. But I graduated in 2020, so that was a very complicated thing, at least in California, with kind of all of the COVID restrictions.
Okay, so we just need to do some transatlantic interpretation here, because graduation for Americans means 18, isn't that right, high school? Whereas graduation for Europeans means 22, 23 BA.
Oh, my bad.
No, not so bad at all.
I should have left it. They would. Your audience would have thought I was older here, Gavin. I should have just left it.
Not your bad, but anyway. So you finished high school under the pressure of COVID in 2020.
Yeah, I had a drive-through graduation.
Wow.
So I had about 30 seconds to run out and take a picture with my parents, and then hop back in the car.
Awful.
No, I mean, credit to my school, it was the most they could do. They really did their best to make it as you know, wonderful as possible. So just because of that, it was kind of an odd way to graduate, and my interests were a little bit split, and I had always had an interest in you know, social media and film and television and storytelling of any kind.
You're a YouTuber in the meantime too, aren't you?
I am. The channel is actually formally retired, but so during this time I started doing what they call reaction videos, which is essentially like a live movie review. There are varying degrees of contribution. So I think it gets a bad rap, where there are certainly people who will just sit and watch a movie and quite literally ooh and ah the whole time and then rake in the dough.
And unless I misheard you, you had a subscriber base that I haven't even begun to dream of in my wildest dreams. What was your subscriber base? It was big, wasn't it?
It just shy of 300,000, yeah.
James, that's amazing. I sit here. You tell me you haven't graduated and you were just fooling around and you had a subscriber base of 300,000 YouTube followers. That's really extremely talented and very competent. Anyway, so
you were doing that,
and then you decided I'm going to get a regular income at somebody else's expense.
Yeah. Well, it took off, and it was interesting because I kind of started it in a different place in my life, and I think you know I went through the sort of classic high school atheist phase, and I've left it. I've left all the videos and things because I think it's a testament to kind of where I've come. I'm not afraid to hide, like, you know, my certain lack of discretion when it came to language or different things like that. I've changed a lot over those few years. I was very young when I started. I still am, but 18 is very young and still really figuring things out. So I've left all that. I think that channel is kind of great because it stands as a testament to how I've kind of changed and I think developed my views on the world. And I'm certain that will continue exponentially. So I was getting ready to get married at the beginning of the year here. And I think that, you know, there's nothing that makes you rethink your life more than marriage. And, you know, I like YouTube. I think I'll still continue doing it. I still have channels and different things I'm doing out there, but I really felt the need to restart and reset and put myself in a place where there was no temptation to choose, where I had to choose between God and money. And I felt that, you know, given where I had started the channel and how big it had become, and it really hadn't had sort of as Catholic roots or my views on certain things and my ability to kind of speak my mind had changed over time. I really felt as though, you know, maybe at a year or two or three, it might come to a crossroads like that. And in all honesty, I wasn't confident that I would make the right choice. And so it was important that I put myself in a situation where I wouldn't.
So I have two questions to ask, and I'm not sure which road to go down. Maybe we can do both. I want to ask you about your rediscovery of Catholic faith, but also I want to pay tribute to the fact that without without going to university, you've arrived at your present job as a fully formed professional with a hugely successful audiovisual career.
Thank
which
you so much.
You've quite clearly achieved more than most people can ever hope to. I've been struggling away as an incompetent sexagenarian for goodness knows how many years, and I've got 22,000 followers, and I'm very proud of it. So the 300,000. I have to give all respect to you. So you've acted as a professional.
Oh, thank you.
You've established your professional career. You've decided you're happy to become a wage slave because it makes marriage much less traumatic. I think it's a very sensible decision. So all credit to you professionally. Tell us a little bit about how you rediscovered or you came back into your Catholic faith, having had a dry period spiritually and professionally and personally.
Right, right. I mean, to put it simply, a pretty woman.
Excellent, a good Catholic woman.
So, exactly, yeah. So, I mean, it's much more complicated than that. Before all the doubters and the scrupulous people like myself in the comments judge that as a less than competent answer. It was something that I always struggled with. I think that I always tended in toward the scrupulous side of faith and everything, really, and I don't think that's the worst. I think it's I mean I'm biased, obviously, but I generally think that's better than the opposite direction. And so I just through a lot of my upbringing, there were questions that didn't seem to be answered, and some of that may have been because people didn't know the answers. Some of that may have been my demands for answers was unreasonable, but I felt as though there were sort of holes in the arguments of Catholicism, and between that and I think teenage rebellion and just general laxity, I fell away because it was very odd. But I had this thought of like I didn't want to fake it, and I didn't really believe in it anymore. And so in my dedication to fully commit, I was like, well, I'm not going to go to Mass if I don't believe in this. And I mean that would be a greater lie than anything. And so it was a long series of events. I had one of the greatest apologetics teachers ever in high school, and he, I think, literally saved my soul, because the man would spar with me in the middle of class for 20, 30, 40 minutes, and just go back and forth, and was respectable and kind and good about it, and really would come up to me after class and shake my hand every time and say, Mr. Kroll, thank you for a good discussion, and it kind of cracked some of the foundations of my beliefs, because we would go back and forth long enough to where I would hit a point where there wasn't an answer or there was something for me to think about. And so between that and kind of this long period of dating my lovely wife, Angela, who had the patience and the grace of God to be willing to engage with my scruples and my anger and sort of struggle, it became apparent that faith was the true thing, and that it was the decision that I needed to make. And I think even the reason it had taken so long was that I was afraid to make it, because I think that I had a full understanding of the responsibility that it calls you to. And that still terrifies me. It's something that I very much relate to C.S. Lewis, and not that I am anything like C.S. Lewis, but reading his writings about him being angry that he found the Catholic faith to be true is very much something I relate to, not because, I hate God or I struggle with the problem of evil, but just because I hate how hard it is. It is difficult. And, I doubt whether I'll be able to rise to that challenge.
I so identify with that. I was brought up in a cathedral school and I'm not sure I lost my faith, but I simply walked sideways away from it. And then I had an evangelical conversion at university, but having had it, I sought the guy out at the end of this week of mission to talk to him, and said, look, I think I've fallen in love with Jesus. He's utterly compelling, and I'm wholly entranced, and I can't put the Gospels down, but there's no way I can live up to him. I know who I am. I literally said, do you have any hints how one might not fall flat in one's face in the gutter, because I can't not follow him, but I already know myself well enough to know that I'm not man enough for this. I don't have the moral fiber. And he was great, and he laughed, and he said, yeah, no, I was there. That's where I was too. So it looks like the three of us have all had the same experience. But that's wonderful. But when you talk about the Catholic Church not being used to the idea of coming to the faith through a good woman, but actually that's exactly what Dante did to some extent. I mean, in the Divine Comedy, Dante follows Beatrice, and one of the most beautiful things about the Divine Comedy is that it gives us a model for romantic love, which it's true Hollywood has picked up and kind of squeezed out the most profound bits and then run on a kind of short loop. Well, if you're not happy with this one, change her and then try that romantic experience. And if that doesn't work, try another romantic experience. But the template of romantic experience, as Dante describes it, and as you've obviously experienced it, is a very Catholic thing, with Beatrice providing a vision of beauty that stimulates rather than satiates human longing, and in a holy and in a good woman draws men like a moth to the light of God, rather than to the furnace of sexuality and of carnality. So if anything, the problem in the Catholic Church is it hasn't paid enough attention to Dante, and it's allowed Hollywood to steal its best lines, best archetypes and best scripts. But maybe you have somebody on the script writing side already knows that and is putting a course on encountering Dante and rejuvenating the Hollywood drama of love a good woman and salvation.
Right. I think that's the hope. I mean, I think when you really get down to it, it's just purpose, right? I think that at least in my personal experience, and I'm sure I have many years more of learning to do on this front, but you know, there is no greater motivator than a woman, than being engaged or getting ready for marriage or being married and realizing, and I felt that call, that call to action. And I think that whether you're married or you're in the religious life or you're single, whether you're Catholic or not, purpose is something that we can't find in the world, and that we've invented about 100 different distractions to make us not think of it, but something that we all need. And I think that when you find that, you will know that you've found
it. It's vocation, isn't it? It's what we were made for. And in a way, the dreadful tragedy of Hollywood is it's taken something holy and purposeful, a spiritual archetype for both body and soul, and it's turned it essentially into entertainment and gratification. Whereas actually, particularly if one reads Dante, the longing, I mean, this is what Lewis talks about longing in terms of Sehnsucht, and on the whole, he means aesthetic and philosophical longing. It took him near the end of his life to accidentally fall in love and discover that holy romance could provide the soul with a hunger that would lead towards God rather than away from it. But in a sense, one of the things a Catholic film school is going to do, I imagine, is to confront the Hollywood perversion, that sounds a bit strong, but maybe it is the right word, certainly distortion and ultimately perversion in terms of the shallowest kinds of narcissistic love and unrestrained sexuality, and offer something, and offer the Catholic vision. That's a very powerful act of restitution and reformation to be involved with, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, and I think even to answer the call of, you know, like I was saying earlier, I think that at least in America there was this hopelessness when it came to the arts and entertainment, and just this idea that, look, we need to go and build our own island because that's not possible. And that may be a call for some people, but at the same time, you know, God calls us to be in the world, you know, not of it, but in it still, and in it. And you know, I personally experience this, and I think a lot of students here experience this call to the arts. And it may sound trite or you know, a little silly to think that there is a story inside, you know, many artists that needs to be told, that needs to be manifested, and that there is a, you know, a personal aspect, kind of a therapeutic aspect, there's a spiritual aspect to it. And then kind of the beauty of the sort of consumable arts, so to speak, is that then there is the good that that can do for others. But to reject that, to ignore that, I think is a great tragedy. And so it excites me to be a part of this organization and a part of this movement to really say no. Because, you know, I felt that there was two options. There was either I make bad movies that are a little bit preachy and silly, or I go to Hollywood and make good movies. And that may not have been true, but that was the choices in my mind. And I think that JP Catholic wants to destroy that vision of the world and give people who may be Catholic or maybe kind of on the fence that there is an opportunity to make things that are good, true, and beautiful, and that we can do that within the Christian worldview, or at least within the Christian rationale, and that we will kind of assist you.
I think that must be one of the hardest things about being a Christian and a Catholic artist, and that is, as you say, the kind of the satire is that the dark and the dangerous are captivatingly interesting, and that the moment you start being good, you run the risk of feeling it's banal. But of course, that isn't true. Well, I mean, it can be true, undoubtedly. With poor saccharine Christian art can indeed be dreadful. But if one looks at the best thing that Christian vision has ever produced, then it's exactly the best aspects of Christian art that work most powerfully as a form of unspoken evangelism for the soul. Because you see things that are indescribably beautiful made by Catholics. Again, I've always thought that when people talk about the Middle Ages and they use the word medieval pejoratively, they have no idea what they're talking about.
Right.
Because it seems to me that the Middle Ages was actually the summit of human aesthetic achievement. Never since then have we built the kind of architecture that makes people lose their breath in wonder. Never since then have we created polyphony that simply ushers you into a presence of the numinous. Far from it. You know, from the moment the Age of Reason hit, it was all downhill in terms of architecture, and less quickly so for music. It took the 20th century to really screw classical music up. But but Catholic art has the most extraordinary track record for evangelism and for pre-evangelism, softening people up to the notion that there's something very, very beautiful and profoundly true that our senses can just alert us to. Isn't that, I mean, we hear agnostics talk about it all the time, and then of course there's the need to evangelize in words to join the dots between the wonder of aesthetic beauty and the accessible truth of the Logos, who is Christ.
Right. And it's interesting too, because I think that, I mean, and there's, I could talk about this probably literally forever, but there's so many different facets of approaches to art, and I think that often, you know, to kind of play devil's advocate, so to speak, we dismiss the culture, the modern culture, wholesale, because its rationality, the kind of ideologies that underlie it, its philosophies are something that at least often are either, you know, undesirable or even sometimes just blatantly untrue. But at the same time, I think that there is, as an artist, right, as somebody who wants to learn about this, there is a value in learning about what they do well, right? You can watch a movie and say the fundamental point of this whole film is sickening, perhaps, but the dialogue is some of the greatest dialogue I've ever read in my life. And that you can take that art, right? You can take these things. And there's a reason people are drawn to it. It may be some of the kind of concupiscence of humanity, but it also, I think, wouldn't have as great of a following if there wasn't some aspect of it that's ringing true. And so to really, you know, before you dismiss a whole generation of artists and filmmakers, to learn the craft and to learn what they do right and to learn what they do wrong, and then to apply that yourself. You know, I am a huge fan of Flannery O'Connor. There's this great quote of hers that goes, "Sin is the engine of fiction." And I love it. I'm going to use it in every podcast I do.
You're going to need to explain. I can see about three meanings of that. Explain what it means to people who, like me, haven't read their way into Flannery O'Connor properly yet, but are trying.
I mean, I think, to me at least, it means that you know, all of us are, we haven't won yet. We're in the middle of our journeys, and so you know, the image of the prim and proper, you know, wonderful Catholic family. That's something we aspire to, but I think that's something that, whether this is tragic or not, we relate to less than we'd like to admit. And so in writing and in making films and stories and television, embracing what I think it makes the Catholic faith and our philosophy so blatantly true, like so obviously true to me at least, is that it's not just this kind of shallow interpretation, kumbaya, we can all be happy. Original sin, right? Read the Bible, these stories, these tragic, brutal, heartbreaking stories of broken people struggling their way to God. And I think when I read a quote like sin is the engine of fiction, to me, that's exactly what it's talking about, where it's like, more often than not, all of us are failing and broken and sinners. And so, you know, to not be afraid of delving into the muck and showing that and letting it speak.
So fiction here is untruth or anti-truth rather than a good yarn. I mean, presumably, I think that's what Jordan Peterson is doing, whereas you're doing it in film and art. Jordan Peterson has discovered that it can be done in the realm of psychology, that taking the great archetypal truths of the gospel and presenting them to people in the Bible in a way that suddenly makes them accessible. They're no longer religious. They're about the whole of life. People say, oh, my goodness, I see that. I recognize it. I that's my drama. I'm caught up in that. That's exactly the skill that he's brought psychologically to the biblical material. But the artist does the same thing. The artist looks at the dark, dangerous, hopeful, realistic biblical material and then represents it again with reality and hope intertwined together to give people a sense that there's a journey to be taken and that the end can be a happy one.
Well, there's something interesting that my wife and I have been talking about Jordan Peterson, because, you know, I think that you listen to his podcast or his work and it's so rich and there's such a kind of a extensive philosophical and psychological understanding of all of it. But something that at least I have perceived in noticing recently is his comfort with not having an answer. His comfort with not having a full understanding of something. And I think that, you know, the more I listen to him and the more I notice that, I think that's one of the reasons why he is as popular as he is. And I know cynics will interpret that as, oh, he doesn't have the guts to stand by his beliefs, or he's trying to catch a wider audience. And I think really he's just honest. And I think that as an artist, that's a really interesting lesson. I think that Catholicism certainly teaches that to a certain extent, is comfort with not knowing, comfort with the unknown. It's like, we understand the way the world works. We understand heaven and hell, but we don't know where I will go, where you will go, where, you know, whatever, name the actor, the Hollywood director that we want to condemn. We don't know. And in a world where I think so many people want you to choose a team and to say a thing and agree wholeheartedly, sign on the dotted line, I think having comfort, making art that doesn't need to say anything, being comfortable with the unknowables of the world, the mysteries of the world, the things we don't understand that we can't know, it's really powerful, because I think that more people are in that place than we'll ever admit.
I think that's true, and that's one of the reasons why Catholic authors like Graham Greene, whom I learned to love before I became a Catholic, and made me envious of being a Catholic, because he was able to take the darkness and the fragility and the sheer incompetence of being a human being and somehow weave grace and hope and redemption and love. And, you know, whereas for most people, they bifurcate into, you know, bad people don't get saved, but in Green, bad people can get saved. And so then there's hope for us all. And once again, the Catholic artist joins the dots between real life, real living, and real heaven and real salvation, and invites people to go on a journey. Listen, I've kept you talking way past our audience's attention span.
Well, thank you. It was a great conversation. I really could go on for hours.
So thank you very much for doing it. And so you know, thank you for John Paul, the great Catholic University. I will put a link into your website so people can pursue it as an institution if they find their appetites waited for it. And
yeah, we have some free courses as well. I'll give you the link to that. But we have a free course like storytelling in the gospel. If you're on the other side of the pond, you've never heard of us, you can't, you know, you're far past the time to go to college. You know, we have free courses with our professors and different things like that to kind of answer that.
That's
need
such
as well.
A clever thing to do. Well, a serious congratulations to your visionary founder. I'm as much a fan of his as he as you say is of mine. So it's a great. A great compliment. Anyway, thank you very much for the conversation and thank you for the vision. And I'm delighted that people have the opportunity to see what you have on offer for free as well as what you provide for in other ways. James, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been great to talk to you.
Gavin, thank you so much for having me.